This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number wherever you are. And if you're in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 will work. Please send us an email if you're so inclined to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're with Melissa Fournoy, head of Louisiana Progress. Dr. Fournoy is a former state representative from the great hamlet of Shreveport, joining us from New Orleans today. And in Mobile is New Orleans native Quinn Hillier, conservative columnist and commentator of renown, with a new book that is out and about called Mad Jones Heretic. It's about politics. And Quinn Hillier is, of course, a man who followed the U.S. Senate election in his adopted state of Alabama this week, with Roy Moore losing to Doug Jones. A Democrat winning a U.S. Senate seat in the Deep South is indeed an aberration in these times, and it's the first time it's happened in Alabama in 25 years, and the last time it was Richard Shelby, who's now a Republican, who did not support the Republican who was running, Roy Moore. Quinn Hillier, your thoughts on the significance of the election in Alabama this week?
Well, the significance is that that you can't put up just anybody and win, even if you're in a heavily Republican state and the person you put up calls himself a Republican. People still have discernment that goes beyond party identification, and even though, you know, it was still close, the fact is people do care about who they send up there, and they're going to judge people on their individual merits. At least enough people will, so that any race can still be won or lost.
In the overall scheme, this is viewed in different lights depending on who people were supporting, but some Republicans are saying that it actually was a win for the GOP. How do you see it as a longtime Republican?
It's not a win for the GOP. It's just a less bad loss than they would have had Roy Moore won. So, I mean, for the people that said it was the best result possible that day for the national GOP, yes. But was it a good one? No. I mean, you know, they can't afford to lose a vote in the Senate. On the other hand, if they had gotten Roy Moore in there, every Democrat in the country running for a federal office next year would have run saying, send me to Washington so I can stand up to Roy Moore, and it would have made difference of 3 or 4 percentage points in almost every single race, and would have handed both the House and the Senate to the Democrats. So, you know, I guess you take your less bad losses rather than your horrible losses, and that's what this was.
Melissa Fournoy, how do you see it as far as the significance, if any? Is it just an aberration that will change soon? After all, Doug Jones will have to run for re-election in 2020, or is this something that could be significant as far as other races in the Deep South?
Well, Jim, it's great to be today. And Quinn, I'm actually hoping you were one of those good Republicans that voted for Doug Jones. I think it's really significant that Senator Shelby went on national TV and said, I can't vote for the Republican, and I'm going to write in the name of a prominent person other than Roy Moore. And I think Shelby and the business groups and the leaders in the Republican Party in Alabama wanted to avoid the shame of Roy Moore. And those 20,000 ardent Republicans that wrote in a different name really turned out to be the margin of victory. So I think there were a lot of forces at play, but I think it's good news for Alabama. I think it's good news for the country. And I think it motivated a lot of Democratic voters, and I think we really saw a new coalition of smart Republicans, African-American voters, women, union people, people of faith voting for Doug Jones, who I think is a really fine man and is going to represent Alabama well. So I think it's a good day for Alabama.
All right, Quinn Hillier. Is this race in some way comparable to the 2015 governor's race in Louisiana, governor's election between John Bel Edwards and David Vitter?
Some national reporters asked me that way back before the sex allegations against Roy Moore broke. And I said, it's not really the same dynamic. John Bel Edwards was successful at portraying himself as much more moderate than Doug Jones ever really pretended to be. And, you know, running for governor is different from being a voice up there in the Senate. So the dynamic was not the same, but the result was the same. The result showed that under certain circumstances, and, you know, it doesn't have to be the same circumstances, but just if there are whatever the right circumstances are, a Democrat can win statewide in a Deep South state. If he runs a good campaign, and if the opponent is flawed, in that way they're the same, but otherwise not really.
All right, 877-217-5757 is your number, and we will go to the phones in short order with Quinn Hillier and with Melissa Flournoy. But this is one seat, but as we know, the Senate right now is very close as far as Republicans and Democrats. And there is a move to get Doug Jones seated as quickly as possible. At the same time, Melissa, the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, wants to have this tax vote before Doug Jones is a member of the U.S. Senate. And it looks like there may even be some erosion among the Republicans who voted for it the first time in the Senate. Marco Rubio saying that right now he can't support the bill as it is currently crafted. How is this going to affect the major legislative accomplishment, if you will, of the president? It hasn't happened yet, but he's very close to getting a tax deal that would pass both houses of Congress. How do you see it, Melissa?
Well, I think that this tax deal may fall apart today, and they're going to have to really kind of hustle over the weekend to try and fix it. It seems like there are quite a few sane Republicans in the Senate that are actually starting to look at the fine print. I think Rubio said, what about the child care tax credit? I think Susan Collins and others said, what about not taxing graduate students in graduate school? I think there are a few other pieces of the puzzle that are falling out. And so if it's going to happen, it needs to happen soon. I personally hope that they put it off till they can get Doug Jones in the Senate, and but we'll see. But I think it's a time for really hard negotiating today and possibly over the weekend. But I'm hoping people wake up and say, hey, wait a minute, what are we really trying to do? How does this help real families? How does it help parents? How does it help teachers? Oh, wait a minute, it doesn't. And then focus on the people we need to protect through the tax code. Not just the Koch brothers and the Waltons and the super rich.
Is the tax bill in trouble, Quinn Hillier, based on what you're hearing and following right now?
You went out just as you started the question.
The tax deal, is it in jeopardy right now?
Is it in jeopardy? Yes, it's in jeopardy. I wrote a column just over a week ago saying that if Republicans were smart, they would just accept the existing Senate bill as written, not go to conference committee. The House should just pass the existing Senate bill, and then if there are problems with it, go back in, you know, in subsequent technical legislation and fix it, because it was just blindingly obvious that if they gave the Senate another bite at the apple, no matter what the conference committee came up with, the prima donnas in the Senate were going to start balking, and they might not pass it at all. And that's exactly what's happening. These people don't know how to, I mean, they can't strategize their way out of a paper bag, and I think this thing could easily fall apart.
How important is this for the stability of the Trump administration? The president, has really had no legislative accomplishments of note. This is the one that looks like it's within his grasp. If it falls through, what happens?
If it falls through, it just shows him as an utterly 100% incompetent leader in terms of legislation. It will mean he will have gotten through the entire first year without a single major legislative accomplishment, which is just unheard of for any presidential administration. And, you know, it could also send him off the deep end because he's known to lose his temper. So it could mean we're in for quite a rocky ride, but it also could mean that his administration just starts to collapse.
Today marks the 47th week of the Trump presidency, and it's been quite a 330 days since Donald John Trump took the oath of office. And he supported, we're short on time, Quinn, but he supported Luther Strange, and then he supported Roy Moore, and both of them lost in a state where he's popular. So does he have any coattails?
No. As a matter of fact, I wrote two
columns about that, I think.
The primary, one just, I wrote two columns in the New York Times, one right after the primary, one right after this election. The last line of the first column was, Donald Trump is an impotent loser.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Quinn Hillier, Republican and conservative columnist and commentator at high levels of the conservative media. He is with us, a former aide to Bob Livingston, by the way, the congressman from Louisiana. And Melissa Flournoy, former state representative from Shreveport, head of Louisiana Progress, who is one of the progressive voices in Louisiana. 877-217-5757 if you'd like to talk with them. And we're discussing the Trump tax bill, tax deal that is now in jeopardy as Republicans and in the House and Senate weigh the differences and try to find some sort of consensus. And right now, Marco Rubio, Florida, who was a major opponent of the president on the campaign trail, says that he will vote no on the bill unless it includes a more generous version of the child tax credit. Also, Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah is saying that he will vote no. So if that were to happen, that would gut the bill if everybody voted the same as they did. It was 51-49 a few weeks ago. 877-217-5757, Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, Mr. Hilliard, you mentioned party identity. Is there a danger that the GOP will now give, be identified with trying to give big tax cuts to corporate America and the rich while saying it's really going to help the common working man and woman who also are now going to have to pay more for Internet usage?
All right. Does this bill hurt the common man, the middle class, or is that overplayed, Quinn Hillier?
That's completely overplayed. It doesn't hurt anybody. The question is how much extra benefit compared to what they have now does this allow? How much more of somebody's tax money does it let anybody keep? How much more of their own earnings does it let somebody keep? And think about it this way. If right now you're paying $1,000 in taxes on whatever your earnings are, and tomorrow you're paying $998 in taxes, well, then you're better off no matter how much or little somebody else is paying. So the question is not, oh, does it hurt somebody? It's, does it help somebody enough more for somebody to claim some political prize? There's nobody other than high earners that get actually hurt by this tax bill. And
all right, I want to get Melissa on this.
Wow, Jim, wow. Okay, Quinn, I just don't think you're right. I think it's the high earners that are protected. I think it's the middle class and lower class people that look like they're going to get hurt just based on the elimination of deductions. It looks like graduate students at LSU are going to get hurt if they're going to have to be taxed on their assistantships. It looks like the endowment at LSU is going to be taxed 1.4% because they're trying to go after Harvard and Yale. You know, there's a lot in this bill that looks really bad. I just hope everybody takes a deep breath and comes to their senses.
877-217-5757 for Quinn Hillier and Melissa Flournoy on opposite sides of the political spectrum. They are good friends, by the way, but they have differences of opinion on most matters political. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. Good morning to you.
Good morning to everyone. Mr. Hillier, if you read Paul Krugman's article or column in the New York Times today, you could not be more incorrect regarding what you just stated. This tax bill the Republicans and Trump are trying to pass is designed specifically for corporations and people as individuals own businesses, which is an exact description of the Trump family. This is the Trump Relief Act, it should be called, or the Trump Special Interest Tax Cut Bill.
All right. Paul Krugman's column is titled, Republicans Despise the Working Class, Quinn. I imagine you and Paul look at things a bit differently.
I think Paul Krugman is just an abomination. He's been caught in so many inaccuracies through the years. It's a joke.
He is a Nobel Prize winner.
Yeah, and he should give it back. Here's the answer to what he's saying and to what Melissa just said. They're saying, oh, you lose all these individual specific tax breaks, tax deductions. What everybody is ignoring is that this bill nearly doubles the standard deduction from $12,000 to $24,000, roughly, which means that for everybody, including the vast majority of Americans who do not itemize their deductions, they get double the deduction without having to do any extra work. And if you show me a low or mid-income person whose deductions, whether they're for education or anything else, whose deductions equal an extra $12,000, I'll be absolutely amazed, because low and mid-income people aren't claiming that much deduction in the first place, whether it's for going to school or anything else. So they're benefiting from this, not losing.
All right. Melissa, your thoughts about Quinn's response to whether or not this hurts the middle class. He's of the mind that it does not.
Well, I think there's too much smoke, fire, and haze in this whole tax discussion. You know, I think John McCain was right. They need to go back to regular order. There haven't been any hearings. I don't think anybody really knows what's in this tax bill.
But McCain voted. He voted for it.
They're negotiating behind closed doors right now. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see what makes the final cut. And it's hard to know what's in it, so I really can't refute what Quinn is saying. And yes, we are friends. And yes, I do hope he voted for Doug Jones.
You've mentioned that a few times. Quinn, I have a hard time believing you voted for Doug Jones.
Let me answer the first thing. First of all, on the tax thing, there's no fog whatsoever about doubling the standard deduction, and every time a conservative brings that up, whoever's on the other side changes the subject, because that takes care of all those other deductions. You double from $12,000 to $24,000, and that benefits the working man, period. Now, on Doug Jones, let me put it this way. Since 2000, I have never voted for Roy Moore. So that might give you an idea. I did not vote for Roy Moore. I would not vote for Roy Moore. And I will never vote for Roy Moore.
All right. Scott in Baton Rouge writes, why is it that when Republicans are out of power, they holler about the federal debt being a huge problem, but now this tax bill they're pushing will add at least $1 trillion to the debt? Quinn?
There's a good point there. It's slightly overstated. Republicans don't believe it will add $1 trillion to the debt, because they do believe the economy will grow enough that it will make up for more growth. It'll create more tax revenue than is being projected. But still, yes, it almost certainly will add a little bit to the deficit, and that is a problem, because Republicans have not been successful at cutting spending enough. And it's worrisome, and I don't hear enough Republicans talking about the deficit and debt anymore, and I wish they would.
All right. Mike in Sherwood Forest. Mike, you're on with Quinn and Melissa.
Yeah, several quick points. The corporate tax reductions are permanent. The home or personal tax deductions are temporary. So this temporary tax cut is going to hurt eventually. There are special provisions that have been reported in the pending legislation where certain senators benefit in the tune of millions of dollars who have particular kinds of energy investments. None of us knows what's in this bill. There's apparently a proposal to gut or eliminate Obamacare, which will hurt people. All of the claims by the Republicans, as far as I'm concerned, are disingenuous, so and the people at the top deserve zero reductions until the budgets are balanced and things like Social Security and Medicare are fully funded. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mike. We do have to take a break. We'll spend a few more minutes with Quinn Hillier, the author of Mad Jones Heretic and also a conservative columnist and commentator of renown nationally and in his home state of Louisiana and his adopted state of Alabama, where Roy Moore lost an upset for Doug Jones, the Democrat winning, and we'll talk about that and more with Melissa Flournoy as well, head of Louisiana Progress, former state representative, now the news with Karen Henderson. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar is producing, and a few more minutes with Melissa Flournoy on the left, Quinn Hillier on the right, and we're talking about a few different matters, including the Alabama Senate election. Quinn Hillier is in Mobile, where certainly that was a big part of this, and Doug Jones won the city of Mobile, as he did won most of the other big cities. But yet, Quinn, a listener, notes that, and I think he's right, that Jones only carried one congressional district in Alabama, despite winning the election by 22,000 votes overall. Does that say something about so-called gerrymandering?
No, it doesn't, because you don't have to gerrymander to get that result. You could have absolutely perfectly uniform-shaped districts. It just has to do where the population is concentrated. So that's not gerrymandering. But if you go county by county, Jones carried a number of counties. It's just a question of where the population is within the state. So I don't think that's a valid criticism.
All right, but I think you've got seven congressional members there, and six of the districts went for the loser, Roy Moore. Melissa, does that say something about the way the congressional districts are drawn?
Well, I'm not actually sure that information is accurate, because I looked at another analysis, but I do think it brings the issue of redistricting into focus. We really do need to focus on redistricting in Louisiana and across the South. And I personally am an advocate for redistricting commissions because I think we do need to take the politics out of redistricting. But I think things are changing. I think Alabama and Louisiana are bellwethers for the South. I think Georgia possibly could elect a Democratic governor. And I think the Democratic Party is resurgent in the South because the Republican Party is so off track with President Trump and candidates like Roy Moore. They've lost their way.
All right. Ray in Prairieville. Ray, you're on with Melissa and Quinn. Hi, Ray.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. And, good discussion, by the way. My question would be on the tax cuts, the proposed tax cuts. And I did the calculation, and I guess the federal deficit, $20 trillion, divided by 325 million is $60,000 per person, every man, woman, child in the United States. And with that kind of a deficit, do we need a tax cut? And when I look at the tax cut, it mainly benefits the top 2%, not the 50%, not the 55%, but just the top 2%. But those are the people who do support the politicians. I'd like to hear you.
All right, Ray. But George Will has said, well, the top 2% also pay a disproportionate number of taxes. Quinn, is that a fair assessment? If they pay 40% of the taxes, should they also get 40% of the benefits?
That's just simple math. I mean, yeah, right now, actually, I think the top 5% of taxpayers pay over 80% of all federal taxes, all federal income taxes. I might be a percent off or two, but it's something very much like that. So this system is already the single most progressive system in actual operation in the world. I don't know how you can make it any more progressive.
But yet the middle class has remained stagnant. This is a question from a few listeners about middle class earnings not going anywhere in the last few decades. Mark Upton writes, just who are the corporations going to market to if his every credible economist says this bill will impact the middle class hardest? Middle class earnings have been stagnant since the 80s. If the middle class keeps getting squeezed, then the only markets for corporate products will be in China. Melissa?
Well, I do think that we're having the wrong conversations around tax cuts for the super rich and corporations. We really need to be talking about how to raise wages, how to raise minimum wage, how to get jobs, higher wage jobs back in the United States. I do think one of the things we need to address is how to get some of the corporate money that's out of the country back in the U.S. And focus on, you know, really helping people raise the standard of living in our country. And if we don't start focusing on the middle class and people who work for a living, we're going to squeeze everybody down into poverty. It's just ridiculous. We're having the wrong conversation.
All right. I did want to note that Kathleen Blanco, our former governor who is battling liver cancer, is addressing the graduates of the University of Louisiana Lafayette on her 75th birthday today. Melissa, you know her pretty well. Your thoughts about our former governor?
Well, I just think Kathleen Blanco is a remarkably talented woman. She's smart. She's kind. She's inspiring. You know, I first met Kathleen in 1987 and have known her for the last 30 years. She's been a tremendous inspiration to women and families across Louisiana. She was a governor at a very difficult time after Katrina, and I think she really was maligned in her response to Katrina. And so I really hope folks understand that Kathleen Blanco is a trailblazer. She's a leader. She was an innovator trying to focus on solving Louisiana problems. And I just think that everybody in our state should wish her a happy birthday.
And let's get our final caller in for Quinn and Melissa, Phil and Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Yeah, this tax cut is typical of all Republican tax cuts. Down the road, they lead to disaster for everybody else but the donors. I mean, the Jindal tax cut, like killing the Selly plan that hurt our state. The Bush tax cut led to disaster. I mean, his policies, the crash of 2008, I think, is attributable to that. And this one is like the abortion of all abortion tax cuts. So, I'm not very hopeful about it.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Quinn, your final thoughts for today on the tax plan?
Yeah, this tax plan helps almost every American by doubling the standard deduction, by cutting rates for just about everybody, and if you want to bring jobs home, if you want $2 trillion in foreign investment to come home, just like Melissa said, how do you do it? By cutting the corporate tax rate. That's what will bring the corporations back home. Every single economist says that if you cut the corporate tax rate, the main beneficiaries, about 60% of the beneficiaries, are workers because you have more jobs and higher wages.
And I wanted to ask you about Mad Jones Heretic. Quinn's new book is out and about. It's a novel, and it's about politics and religion. It's quite a spellbinder.
Well, thank you. Mad Jones Heretic, it's about a modern-day Martin Luther who literally nails religious theses to church doors and gets a national following, and the media and the politicians all misunderstand what he's saying. And so it's satire in modern media, politics, and religion, available at Amazon.com. Mad Jones Heretic.
All right. And Melissa, your final salvo on the tax plan as we know it right now and where it potentially is going with some Republicans right now on Capitol Hill in the Senate having some misgivings.
Well, I hope they shine a light on the negotiations that are going on. I hope they revisit some of the issues that we've discussed. And I hope that they take a breath. It looks like if it's going to get defeated, they should wait for Doug Jones and go back to the table. So let's just buckle up and hang on.
What do you think will happen?
I don't think they're going to have the votes today, and so I'm not sure they'll have the votes next week. So this, I predict it's going to fall apart.
All right. Finally, a listener asked about net neutrality. The FCC yesterday reversed rules requiring net neutrality. Melissa, I know you followed this issue to some extent. What are your thoughts regarding this?
I think this might be the one of the worst decisions that's been made so far in the Trump administration, and will have a number of unintended consequences for consumers, and that the government and the FCC are going to regret this decision. I think it's the wrong decision. It's going to end up costing people more money, and I think the Internet should be I just think that we've made a bad decision on this one.
All right, Quinn, I think we still have Quinn. Quinn, your thoughts about net neutrality and the FCC reversing the rules requiring it?
I have no thoughts on it at all. I pay almost no attention to tech policy, so
all right.
Sorry.
Well, 3-2 was the vote. Thanks to Quinn Hillier and to Melissa Flournoy for joining us, and I'm sure we'll be calling on them again soon. And happy holidays to both of you. And we're joined now by Max Martin. He's with Renew LSU, a student at the Old War School. And LSU lately has gotten into the dispute about whether Confederate names should be on buildings and streets. And Raphael Sims, the admiral, who, by the way, has a statue, I believe, in Mobile where Quinn is situated, he has been removed. The street in his name that ran past the Union at LSU, and the bookstore, and also even the African American Student Center. So that was step number one, and there are other names that are being changed in the process of this discussion, if you will. And now there is a move, Max Martin, to take the names of Murphy Foster off Foster Hall and John Parker off Parker Coliseum, two former Louisiana governors. Why is this now in the offing? Max Martin? Do we have Max? Can you hear me, Max Martin?
Hey, yes. Jim, thanks for having me. So
I could reframe the case for Renew LSU and our argument a little bit. I think it has less to do with removing Confederates or removing former governors. That part is somewhat less material than the fact of who we want to replace them with. And I think it's about creating a campus atmosphere and a campus climate that's not only respectful but also reflective of the students we have on campus.
All right. We're going to talk with Max Martin in our final segment of Renew LSU. Should names be changed at LSU? 877-217-5757. Back in two. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And if you're dialing locally, 297-5633. We're visiting with Max Martin of Renew LSU. He's a junior from Baton Rouge and is attending the Old War School. And is part of this discussion about changing names on campus buildings, he says that we should honor more people rather than that should be the focus rather than taking names off. But recently, if you drive down Highland Road, you'll see that Raphael Sims Road is now South Campus Boulevard, I think, or South Campus Road. It was changed in a whiff, and Raphael Sims, that name was outside the Union when I was in school 40 years ago, and it is gone. The admiral from the Confederacy has been removed at Louisiana State University, and there's some other buildings that also have Confederate-era icons on the facade, including Beauregard Hall, by the way. Bob Mann, who was with us a few days ago, the professor at LSU, and a columnist for NOLA, says, my students discovered that only one academic building displays the name of an African-American on a campus with a student population that is 12% black in a state which a third of the residents are black. That building is A.P. Touro Senior Hall, man calls a grungy classroom building unpopular with students. Max Martin, is that what you're talking about as far as changing the landscape at LSU?
Yes, sir, and I think Raphael Sims was renamed to
to Veterans Boulevard?
That you're correct. It is. South Campus is already there, and Veterans is the name of the Is it Veterans Boulevard or Veterans Road? But it says Veterans.
I'm not sure, but it's Veterans, and I think, you know, that was important for us as well, and we were really happy with that decision considering the importance of the parade grounds and our military background as a school. But no, that is the case, and I'll go even further to say that it's not just about students of color and our great alumni of color that we want to honor, but our campus is also now 53% women, and the fact is that there still aren't enough buildings and places on campus that honor our women graduates and our women alumni as well. And I think what you said is definitely correct, but I would just further and expand upon it to say that our overall goal is making a campus climate that is respectful and reflective of the diversity that we have on our campus and also the diversity we want to see. I mean, today is LSU's graduation, and we want students and parents coming on campus to be walking around streets, buildings, statues, and memorials that represent the true and honorable place that LSU is, was, and can be.
877-217-5757 is your number. Max Martin from Renew LSU, a junior in Tigertown, is with us. Mark Ballard, in his column a few days ago, actually it was just a regular news story, says, while governor between 1892 and 1900, Murphy Foster signed legislation establishing voter registration requirements that effectively kicked blacks, poor whites, and some Republicans off voter rolls. He later was a U.S. Senator and his grandfather of Republican Governor Mike Foster, who held office from 1996 to 2004. John M. Parker was Louisiana governor from 1920 to 1924. He participated in and refused to apologize for the 1891 lynching of 11 Sicilian immigrants accused of involvement in the murder of New Orleans Police Chief David C. Hennessy. The student group wants Foster Hall and Parker Coliseum renamed to memorialize LSU alumni with notable accomplishments, such as U.S. Marine Corps Commandant General Robert Barrow or Vice President Hubert Humphrey or New Orleans Mayor Dutch Morial. It is amazing that LSU has a former Vice President, Hubert Humphrey, who was really the legislative mastermind of the civil rights era. And he has no name, no building, nothing to commemorate Hubert Horatio Humphrey at LSU. That is remarkable. Max, is this going to be something that Renew LSU is pushing in the days to come?
Certainly. I definitely think he's somebody who's noteworthy and praiseworthy and deserves a building. And I think also some of the other people we've recommended as well are far more deserving and definitely more respectful of all the students we have on campus. The specific change that was submitted to the university, and as far as Governor Foster has Dr. Lane as a replacement, she was the first African-American poet laureate of Louisiana, and she's in the Louisiana Black Hall of Fame and an LSU alumna. So we think that there's certainly a lot of deserving candidates that can be considered, and I actually think it'll be a worthwhile process for the university to more closely examine its history. And, you know, we're in a really pivotal time now as a country as well, when we're looking at our history and not choosing mm-hmm. what to ignore, but choosing what we really want to celebrate. And I think that can be a really healthy process if we embrace it as a culture.
All right. Tracy notes that James Carville has recommended that the parade grounds be named in honor of William Tecumseh Sherman, who was head of the Union Army and the first president of LSU. Nothing on the LSU campus has William Tecumseh Sherman's name on it either.
So Renew LSU has not taken on Sherman specifically as a figurehead at this point. I mean, there are certainly he was a general for the Union, but there are also some tricky parts of his background racially, and I certainly think that moving forward that his name will be part of the discussion, but it's unclear at this time if he's going to be part of Renew's recommended changes to the university. But that being said, at least speaking personally, naming buildings after people to me is a sign of respect. It's a sign of celebration. These are not names or people that I want barred from campus at all or kept out of the history books. So I definitely think Sherman has a place on our campus. I just think the question is, when you name buildings or parts of campus after people, what is that really saying?
Well, a master plan would redesign elements of the campus and demolish the dormitory that's the tallest building on campus, Kirby Smith Hall, named in honor of Confederate General Kirby Smith, who, by the way, when I was in school at LSU, I lived in that dorm for a couple of years, and room 1108, and classroom building named for Colonel Samuel Henry Lockett, the math building across from the journalism school. He was a Confederate engineer, so... LSU appears to be going directly after these Confederate icons, and maybe for good reason. It appears that there's no coincidence that these are the buildings that are being targeted.
Well, I can't necessarily speak on behalf of the university's motives when it comes to that. I mean, I think they've stated publicly that that's not their intent, but I mean, I'm certainly happy with the outcome, and I think for those who have been in those buildings in the last couple of years, whoever they're named after, they're definitely in need of repair.
All right. Well, Max Martin, another listener, notes that Beauregard Hall is one that is not on the list to be renamed, and says it should be renamed immediately. That was one of the statues that Mayor Mitch Landrieu ordered down in New Orleans.
Yes, sir. Well, it's not on LSU's list to tear down or rename, but it's on Renew LSU's list, and so certainly I agree with your listener.
All right, what about the buildings named for Thomas Boyd and David Boyd? Are they on your list to be renamed?
That is not on LSU. That is not on Renew LSU's list as of now, but I will say that part of our goal as an organization is not to necessarily go back and legislate history with every single individual. I mean, I that every, you know, building, or at least a lot of buildings on campus, would be open to be renaming to celebrate new figures in our history and to include new people in the in the process. And so I think it definitely is important to focus on who we've celebrated in the past and why that may or may not be a good idea, but I really hope your listener, and just to touch on this a little bit, I understand why this is a touchy subject. And I myself, you know, have some reservations, and I think it's important to be really reflective when we go through this, because it is so important what we name things. But in terms of people who are listening and maybe skeptical, I really want the focus to be on the new focus and the new names and the new sort of direction that we want to take in terms of who we celebrate and how we define our history.
All right, and yet the nickname of LSU, the Fighting Tigers, was from a Confederate war unit. Should we change the name of the nickname? Should LSU no longer be the Tigers, Max Martin?
Well, you know, that's why he come on this show for the tough hitting questions. I personally don't see a name need for the change of the nickname, and you know, We could get into a long discussion about where the nuances are as far as I see it, but I don't see the name for it, and I also don't see the outcry and the negative response towards minority students on campus to the nickname in large number.
All right, we do have to roll, but thank you, Max Martin of Renew LSU, and this is a story that has legs, and we will follow it with you. And thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. Back Monday, same time, same place. Until then, thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.